other way. Peace is possible and even necessary. So drop the sword and pick up the hammer and the saw, and let's build a better world.
Mr. Davis, you're a veteran of the peace and justice movement in this country. Are you surprised by the size and depth of this movement, this global movement that's expressed here today?
I'm not at all surprised. I fully expected that this would happen. As you say, I've been involved in demonstrations going, you know, all the way back, certainly to the Vietnam time. And I know that then, you know, we Americans waited, and there was trauma, and there was pain, and there was bloodshed, and it took us a long time to let the government know where we stood and about the war. But now, thank God, look at this. No blood has been spilled, no troops have been landed, no shots have been fired, but the people have come out and solidly said and indicated to the whole world, no, war is not the way.
So what gives you hope after all of these years of your activism? And do you feel that the Hollywood community has spoken out enough?
Well, I'm not prepared to deal with the Hollywood community. I live in New Rochelle, so I can tell you more about what the Bronx is doing than Hollywood. But, I feel that this outpouring, as I said before, gives us a chance to state who we are and what it is we want before something awful happens. And I think the powers that be should listen, and I'm sure that they will. Our presence here makes a great difference, but why be surprised? This is what the people are supposed to do. My fear is that we will become a people so sedated by the trivia that we see in movies and television that we will not pay attention, and that we will lose the freedoms that made this country special. You know, we can't do that. And the people are saying it in a loud voice. This is our country in our hands. We are voting today for peace.
Thank you very much. Bishop Tutu is right next to us. We're hoping he will be walking over right now. But when he heard that there would be no protest march, that it could only be a rally, he said it reminded him of apartheid South Africa, Ozzie Davis.
Yeah. Well, it seems that the people have said, you won't let us march, but we march anyhow. If the side streets are full of people still coming to the march, still coming to the rally. And as long as we get a chance to express ourselves, and surely the effort of the city and the police to keep us from marching is as eloquent as the march would be.
Well, look who's here. We have one very cold Bishop Desmond Tutu. And we would like to ask you if you could sit right over here. If you could sit down right over here.
No, I'm fine.
We could, okay.
Can I be here?
Yes.
And stand next to beautiful people? No. I mean, this is an exhilarating moment.
It is.
It is a moment that fills you with new hope and faith in humankind. That people so many miles away from Iraq can come out in this kind of weather. And they are pouring. I mean, they're pouring into New York to say, give peace a chance. Fantastic!
Amen.
Wonderful!
I'm wondering, Nelson, your thoughts on Nelson Mandela's comments that the way Blair and Bush are dealing with the UN would not happen if the Secretary General was not a black man, and that that President Bush is willing to plunge the world into a Holocaust.
I would say, I mean, that when you are looking for why they disregard the United Nations, you look for all sorts of possible explanations, and that may be a possible explanation. I just think that it is still possible for the world to pull back from the edge of the precipice. It is possible for peace to happen.
Bishop Tutu, when you say that the UN is the only legitimate authority that can determine whether or not to go
to
war,
absolutely. I mean, the everyone is agreed. I mean, in most of these cities, people are coming out and saying the one war that they might in fact support is one that was sanctioned by the United Nations. And the United Nations is saying, well, before we get there, give the inspectors more time. No to war.
Amen.
Bishop Desmond Tutu, as well as Ozzie Davis. We want to thank you very much for being with us.
This is KPFA or KPFB Berkeley or KFCF Fresno. And again, if you'd like to help support KPFA in its efforts to bring you the voices of dissent, the voices standing up to war, and to help pay for some of the costs of these rallies, like the one in New York today and the one in San Francisco tomorrow, please give us a call right now at 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732, or 848-5732 in the 510 area code, and give us what you can. Support KPFA during our fund drive.
Wall will put an end to mankind. It was also said by a great president that when the state and the leaders of our government moves to a place of tyranny and becomes a society of secrecy, it is incumbent upon the citizens to not only raise their voices in criticism and protest.
You're listening to Harry Belafonte.
That it is the right thing to do, that they are doing the patriotic thing, and those who fail to raise their voices with us today are the traitors of patriotism. Were my friend Dr. King alive today, he would smile, because we will make a difference. And the message that we send to the world today is one of warmth and confidence, and we stand in solidarity with all the people of the world who are marching at this very moment to join us in this end to war. Thank you, and God bless you all.
Thank you. Our next speaker, Larry Cohen, is the Executive Vice President of the Communication Workers of America, 700,000 members, North America's largest union in the information sector. I give you Larry Cohen.
We turn now to Voices of the World.
Just getting dark. We've had the most wonderful day here today. We've had a demonstration where some estimates are now in the region of 2 million people. We had a fantastic range of speakers, major political figures, but most importantly of all, we had Jesse Jackson here, who was wonderful. He spoke on the stage with Tim Robbins, a very important actor from the States, and he also did a little thing with Miss Dynamite, who's a very well-known singer here. It's been a wonderful day, and really we think we've made a huge and impressive point against the war drive. Tony Blair has been really thrown by the Blix report at the United Nations yesterday. They were hoping that Blix would be far harder on the Iraqi regime, but Blix is saying that really they found nothing of importance, and in a sense there's nothing to justify war. Tony Blair is very isolated in Britain. He now only has 9% support for a war without a second UN resolution. And it looks as if they won't get a second UN resolution. So he's been up in Scotland today talking about the morality of war. But we're also talking about the morality of war. We're saying that this war in Iraq would be immoral and that we are against it. And I think today we've seen the people of Britain stand up and be counted. This has been tremendous. This has been the biggest demonstration in British political history.
G'day, my name's Damien Lawson. I'm the coordinator of the Victorian Peace Network in Melbourne, Australia. We're a growing coalition of trade unions, students, churches, environment groups, as well as local peace groups right across southeastern Australia. And we've just had the biggest demonstration in Melbourne we've ever had. In Melbourne, possibly the biggest ever in Australia. Over 200,000 people filling the streets of Melbourne, protesting against George Bush's plan for war. And, of course, the strong element that was coming right through the protest was wanting to bring Australian troops home to the Middle East, to be really opposed to John Howard's support for George Bush. John Howard's the leader of Australia. And it was really clear and strong coming through the demonstration that people saw this as being a war for oil and not about weapons of mass destruction, that people wanted to support the people of Iraq, not Saddam Hussein, but the way to do that is not through bringing more devastation on Iraq than's already been caused over the last 10 years.
My name is Gabriele Canales from Greenpeace Italy, and the peace rally is not yet ended. 1.8 million people turned out, and it was a very colorful, long march, lasting since 11 o'clock in the morning till now, and the process is still going on with a lot of music of people and a lot of people witnesses speaking in the main square where the old people gathered in Rome.
Hi, my name is Edgar Behrens. I'm calling. I'm reporting from Madrid, Spain, where the crowd here is just unbelievable. The crowd reaches, they're saying it's about 2 miles long, half a million people, perhaps a three-quarters of a million people are here. You'll see all walks of life here, people from the very young to the very old. The Spain has a situation here where 92% of the population is actually against the war, and yet Aznar, President Aznar, is backing Bush 100%. Yesterday, the Minister of Foreign Affairs in the Security Council, Ana Palacios, the Minister of Foreign Affairs here from Spain, was very eager to declare war. The people here are completely taken aback by her warmongering, and they are out in the streets in numbers. Three-quarters of a million people are here, and it is unbelievable. Pedro Almodóvar will be speaking soon here. He's going to open up the rally. Heard from the officials here that people are basically 2 miles away. They cannot even get any closer to the stage because it is so packed. The streets of Spain of Madrid are completely packed.
Hi, this is Arundhati Roy, and I'm calling from Kerala in India, where it's close to midnight. And I'm calling to speak to the people on the streets of New York and on the streets of almost every major city in the world. And I just want to make a small statement. The U.S. government's war to promote terrorism, because that's what it is, it promotes terrorism, has launched a two-pronged assault on the world. One is a military assault in the Middle East that seeks to redraw the map of that region and establish U.S. hegemony over oil. And the other is an assault on the intelligence of the human race. It's not the lies we're being told, but the quality of those lies that is truly insulting. And what we in the peace movement must do is to try and turn every bomb that is dropped on Iraq, that has been dropped on Iraq, into an expose of the criminals that are waging this war, because they are baby killers, water poisoners, long-distance bombers, merchants of death. And each of you who is marching for peace today is doing a wonderful, wonderful thing. Let no one persuade you otherwise. I wish I were there. Goodbye and lots of love. Once again, this is Arundhati calling from India.
Those were voices from around the world. We're here in the streets of Manhattan, 51st and 1st Avenue, this February 15th. And while we've heard a lot about courage and heroes today, I want to introduce Leslie Kaufman, who can bring us a report from the streets of New York and some of the courage and heroes that have been in display out there today as people have tried to get to this demonstration. As you know, the police department refused a permit for a march. It's been very hard for the hundreds and thousands who've gathered here to actually make it to the rally. rally site. Leslie, what are you hearing from the streets about what kind of confrontation people have found themselves in?
Well, by and large, what's happening is that the crowds are just so huge that people are having a hard time just moving forward. My understanding, the latest report I heard is that on 1st Avenue, right now we're stretching up to 69th Street, and then almost an equivalent length of 2nd Avenue and 3rd Avenue are filled with people as well. And I have also heard some reports of people as far west as Park Avenue. That's in addition to feeder marches that are happening all around the city. Of course, one consequence of us not having been given the march permit and having been given this rally set up with all the little pens is that it's hard to see everybody in one place at one time. But it's clear that it's massive, absolutely massive. And there's been, you know, a lot of people just marching anyway, marching up the avenues.
How many feeder marches at last count?
I think the last count was 72 from all over the city. Most of them, I think, went quite smoothly. We heard reports of problems with the student feeder march that was coming up from Union Square. The police arrested somewhere between 2 and 5 people at that rally when they were at that march when they began marching on the street. But I haven't so far heard of other problems. But, of course, communication has been a little chaotic here today.
Now, Bread and Puppet Theater were here with 300 puppets. Did they get here safely? What was that like?
I actually don't know. I assume that they did, or we would have heard otherwise. But we've had all kinds of crazy problems. The phones were down in our office off and on for hours most of the day. And so it's been chaotic, but it's been actually a really wonderful chaos because it's the chaos of so many people here and so many voices for peace. It's really inspiring.
Leslie from United for Peace and Justice, do you think we're going to stop this war?
I actually am optimistic that we will. You know, the date for the invasion keeps getting pushed back farther and farther and farther. And you can't tell me that doesn't have anything to do with all the grassroots mobilization there's been. Today is going to be such a stunning overall mobilization around the world. I mean, the numbers that we're hearing from Europe are just phenomenal. 2 million in Rome, 2 million in London, you know, almost 1 million in Barcelona. I mean, just all over. And there's more than 600 cities around the world that are having protests today. I think this is such a massive global uprising for peace that it can't help but help stop this war.
Tell me a little bit about what it was like in the offices of United for Peace and Justice as you prepared for this march. Did you get calls that surprised you of people coming into the city for this demonstration?
Well, the whole thing was a tremendous surprise. I mean, first of all, it was just all happening on an incredibly accelerated schedule. We organized in 5 weeks what's normally done in 5 months. It usually takes months and months to put together an event on this scale. And from the start, it was just clear that we actually just had to provide people with tools. People were all over the country just incredibly motivated to organize for this. But right. We also, you know, we handed out more than 1.1 million leaflets in New York City.
Congratulations, Leslie. You did a great job. From United for Peace and Justice, Leslie Kaufman. I'm Laura Flanders. Back to you.
And Laura, I'm here with Vern Avery Brown and Harry Belafonte. Harry Belafonte, you just spoke, and you have taken on General Colin Powell. Can you talk about your comments?
My comments about General Colin Powell is really not a personal confrontation. Black Americans and many peoples of color have always taken great pride in what those of us who have come from a history of oppression have achieved. And when an individual breaks through and comes into the place where decisions are made that can make a difference, we then have high expectations. Once that is rejected by those who have acquired this position, we may sit in quiet disappointment. But when the person who achieves that distinction then puts him or herself in the service of our oppression and those who create new ways in which to oppress us, that is morally unacceptable. And that is my argument with General Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. I expect, as do others, that their history should have prepared them for a much better articulation about how to treat people globally. Most of the people in the world who suffer from tyranny, most of the people in the world who suffer from the tyranny of oppression, the tyranny of hunger, the tyranny of ignorance, the tyranny of HIV/AIDS. There sits terror. And when you look very carefully at what it is that has caused this constant oppression, you will see that somewhere in there, America plays the game. And this gathering here today helps us understand that there is another America that is strong, that is resolute, and are made up of millions and millions of people. As a matter of fact, we do make the majority voice in this nation, and that we have let the world know that we are in solidarity with those who seek to have other ways than war to settle our grievances.
Mr. Belafonte, you have been an outspoken critic of this, of the government, U.S. government, for decades now in your role as a part of the peace and justice community. If you had an opportunity to speak with President Bush, a man of your stature, what would your message be to him?
Dr. King once said that to conquer your enemy is no victory. He will only rise again to confront you. What we've got to do is to look for the moral center that will help us prevail in convincing these men and some of the women who are involved with them that it is not politically expedient to do what they're doing. They're killing people all over the world and stimulating the possibility that that anger will continue and that rage will continue to haunt the generations that come after us. What I try to convince the president on is that he can no longer play a morally bankrupt game, that he must understand that people will not stand for it, and that we will come the right time, which would be the next election. If it is not stolen from us again, we will be able to emphatically show the world that America is not for war.
What about that issue of the election being stolen? The fact that the man who occupies the White House right now was not democratically elected president?
I think that was the first sign for Americans that we are in great jeopardy. Most people say, not in America. You know, fascism and oppression cannot happen in this country. That is more a prayer than a possibility. And I think that when we saw the theft of our government, when we saw the suspension of civil liberties, when we saw the changing of the Constitution, when we see that people can be arrested without charge and without counsel and without anybody communicating, all of these are signals that we are in great danger of becoming oppressive and totalitarian. It was exactly the same way things happened in Nazi Germany. And people in the beginning remained silent, and that silence began to erupt when it was a little too late. I think America's got to awaken to the truth of what's going on in our nation.
Right. The administration has said that the Homeland Security Act is necessary in order to protect Americans. Given what you've just said, what is your reaction to this Homeland Security Act that tends to be rolling back or eroding the constitutional?
I think the security that American people need is the security of truth. I think they need the security of employment. I think they need the security of social and physical development. I think we need to have health care. I think we need security in education. We sit with the largest population of prisoners in the world. Over 2 million men and women suffer in our prisons for reasons that they don't deserve to be in prison for. And I believe that when you look at that number, most of them are African Americans and Mexicans. We have more black people in the prisons of America than we have in the universities of America. And I think therein sits the great insecurity of this country. Were we to change all that, America would be one of the most secure nations in the world. And what these men are doing, and Ashcroft's doing, with all of this hoopla, is to distract the American people, and we are being misled. And we must be very careful. There's an old saying that if you control what people know, you control what people do. And we must get out the truth so people can begin to think differently.
Harry Belafonte, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank
you. You are listening to The War. The World Says No to War. And you are watching this and the largest public media collaboration in this country. We turn now to Andrew King and the streets of New York.
What brings you here today? We know everyone's here to protest the war, but what specifically brought you here today?
Well, I just, first of all, I have a brother that's in the National Guard, and he just got word that they were going to be shipped over. I mean, originally he was solicited as a high school student, you know, with the promise of going to getting, you know, college money, which that, you know, that's he, and, you know, they're reactivating people, you know, these he really didn't think that he would have to go to war. They make these empty promises. So it's really to protest and to, you know, be out here with, like, for the peace movement, because this is ridiculous. My aunt watches, like, Fox TV, and it's incredible how, you know, I feel like the only thing that they're really doing is engendering, like, more fear, you know, and panic, you know, and, you know, my mother, for instance, who is not part of the peace movement, just feels scared. I asked her to come with me, and she felt that she was going to be arrested. She's more afraid of the police, of being arrested by the New York City police, than of terrorists, and, you know, and so I find that to be interesting, yeah. It's an interesting point. Yeah, no, she did not come today because of New York City police.
Great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
You are listening to the streets of New York from the streets as well as the stage, and we are watching hundreds of thousands of people make history, not only in this city, but millions around the world in more than 600 cities. I'm here with Verna Avery Brown and Robert Knight. Robert Knight just went over to 3rd Avenue. We are just above the UN at 1st Avenue, and it is a very different scene there, Robert.
Amy, Verna, I just went to see for myself the police procedures, and they are atrocious. There are far more people from the low 40s to the 80s, according to police officials, that are mobbed on 3rd Avenue. They are being crowded in the middle of the street and not being permitted to come east to hear where the rally is. There was one woman I spoke with who had to feign illness in order to escape the barricades. 2nd Avenue has been turned into a police transportation channel, nothing but police traffic. They're deploying more of those metal barriers that interlock. What the New York City Police Department, along with federal law enforcement assistance, they have perfected the art of arresting protesters in place.
Robert, we hear the helicopters overhead, and we've seen some policemen actually with dogs, and of course the mounted police as well. Did you witness any? When I came in, I noticed that the police were not fitted in riot gear. Did you witness any of the arrest, and what kind of handling were they doing?
No, I did not personally see any arrests. I do understand that a number have taken place today, but I do not have details on that. But I think the significant thing is that this rally is far larger than it would appear, and the very purpose of the barricades and the segregation of the participants in the rally is intentional.
Hmm. We turn now to Laura Flanders interviewing Julian Bond of the NAACP.
Quite a day, probably 500,000 people in the streets, we hope, by the end of the day.
Tell us
who you're here representing. How many people do you
represent? I represent the NAACP, the country's oldest, largest civil rights organization. We passed a resolution against unilateral war in Iraq in October of last year, and I'm here today to say that that commitment against unilateral war is still good.
Is there a racial aspect to what we're seeing, the war at home and the war abroad, in your view?
Oh, listen, polls this week show that African Americans oppose the war by margins of 3-1 in the United States. I think all of us remember the Vietnam War, when African Americans were greater represented in the casualty list than they were in the population. And there are real suspicions about President Bush's domestic policies, and that carries over to suspicion about his foreign policies. So we're here to say we don't want war.
What do you make of the initiative to reinstate the drums coming out of...
You know, I'm actually of mixed opinion about it. I was opposed to it when I was draft eligible. I do think that citizens ought to have some commitment to serve in some fashion. I'm not sure if serving the military is the best thing, so I'm really of mixed minds about it.
So where does the NAACP go next in its activism around the war at home and the war abroad?
Well, our youth chapters are engaged in putting on teach-ins on the college campuses where they are. Our